Welcome to the Spin Access Podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
And I'm David Orr.
In today's episode, guys, we have David Orr, one of the best putting coaches on the planet, runs the Flastic Academy in North Carolina, and we're excited to have David on to talk all things putting.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about the things that average golfers don't do well or get wrong in putting. Just to start off, what would be the biggest thing?
Well, they just need to practice more. That's the first thing. Like a little practice before round and after round. They just need more experience on putting greens, especially like when you're playing an away game. Like you're not playing your home course. I think the average golfer struggles going to a different venue, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So what is it about that different venue? Green speed, slopes?
Could be. Yeah. Could be the greens are faster. The greens have more slope. When you play an away game, so to speak, it really shows whether you have the skills of green reading or your ability to adapt to speed, or if you hit a lot of pushes or pulls, it kind of gets exposed a little bit. So basically your skill set needs to travel, and that's what the amateur golfer struggles with, aside from technique. I mean, we could go down the technique rabbit hole forever, but the skills, they got to have the skills to travel, right? That's number one.
Do you find that a good putter can just show up on a green, plop a ball down and say, pick a hole somewhere and kind of hit it at the right speed just by kind of looking at it, literally the first putt they hit on a green?
I don't know about the first putt, but maybe a few putts.
Yeah.
You know, Brad Faxon and I talk about this quite a bit, that he can show up at a venue within a few putts, pretty much get an idea how fast they're rolling uphill or downhill or how much they're breaking sideways. But, you know, he's the best. He's one of the best of all time. But you see this at the tour level. These guys play a different venue every week, so they have to develop the skills of adapting and adjusting to different greens. A good example, I worked for Justin Rose in 2022, not as his putting coach. I was doing full swing, but traveling with him, going from the Canadian Open to the US Open to the Scottish Open to the British Open. Those are four drastic changes in environment, and to see how quickly within, I'd say within 9 holes or 18 holes of a practice round, he's pretty much adjusted. You know, it depends. You know, I mean, obviously U.S. Open or Augusta might be a little bit different, but they do a lot of prep going into that. Like the week before Augusta, I know that he was practicing on stumps at 12 and 13 in Albany in the Bahamas. So a lot of it's preparation as well. So it gets, again, it gets back to experience. You got to get out there and practice. And just for the amateur golfer, let's keep it simple. Let's practice. Let's warm up before round and maybe even practice a little bit after a round. So just get in that habit of before and after, right?
It's always one of those things I always say. You mean golfers are supposed to practice their putting, right? You go to the range and no one's ever on the practice putting green. They're all out there bombing driver.
Well, if they do show up, so our putting green is actually halfway between. They have to go across the putting green to get the first tee from the range, so or to get their cart. So they plop a few balls down and they only hit it one direction. One guy might be hitting them uphill saying, boy, these are slow. Another guy's hitting them downhill and go, oh man, these things are lightning fast. Eric, you've been on our main putting green with your daughter.
Yep.
It's a 3% slope, 3 or 4% slope. And yeah, downhill is fast and uphill is slow.
Right.
So it's learning to hit different putts from different angles on the slope is a good little warm up as well.
So David, I've heard you talk about how great putters are actually like doing different things in their stroke in relationship to what that putt is, uphill right to left or downhill left to right. What would you say to us as coaches and to other players who are out there? Like I'll go to a college practice and they're all on a mat or a mirror practicing the same stroke every single time.
Yeah.
What would you say to players about that?
Yeah, I think when you're calibrating your setup or calibrating something in your stroke, a little stroke station or block practice is good for a little while, right? I think then you need to go into random practice. And I actually do it in reverse. I actually warm up first. I actually hit 30 footers downhill, 30 footers uphill, 30 footers left to right, 30 footers right to left, maybe even a 50 footer. And then I'll come in and say, okay, today I've got too much foot pressure on my right foot. I got to get a little more balanced. And that's where that block stroke station comes in. But I do think people spend a little too much time on block practice. But you got to remember, at a tour event, it's because of space. You've only got like 9 practice holes, and then you got, I don't know, 70 players that are going to the first tee or the range, or you know what I mean. It's a thing of space. So like we do a lot of lag putting and practice rounds on Tuesdays and Wednesdays out on the course. to fake ghost holes or fake holes that are placed at Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Whole locations doing their lag putting out there. So they can do all their short putting on the practice green where it's crowded. And, you know, monkey see, monkey do. I think a lot of, you know, if players go to a tour event, they go copy the tour player. They're on a mirror, on a mat, you know, hitting a bunch of 6 to 8 footers in a row. But there's a reason for that block practice. It's trying to like work, calibrate, the keywords, calibrating a setup or something that you're working on in your stroke, right? So a player might have one, maybe two things at address at the most, and they might have one thing that they're working on their backswing or one thing in their downswing, or they might be on a training aid. But yeah, block practice has its place for sure. But random practice is where you need to be hitting different distances, different slope, different effective stimp, running your mental process. It was interesting. I was practicing the other day for 45 minutes on our main putting green. And there was a bunch of amateurs, and then every rep I was running my process and routine. I'd go back behind the ball, whatever I'm working on, to get a feel for it, walk in, set up to it, hit it, watch the ball roll out, stop, go back behind it. And it's funny, when I was practicing, you could feel the eyes just shift to watching me practice, right? Versus what they're doing is they're hitting putts, raking balls, and just, you know, they're raking a ball over while the other one's still going. And then it's kind of like, when I was practicing, you could just feel the eyes, you know, they're like, wow, this guy's practicing differently, right? You know, so a deeper, more deliberate, not slow. Matter of fact, I actually try to flow from when I'm behind the ball. I try to flow right into my setup, because that's the thing that I fight the most, is adapting my setup to the slope and learning to do it without being too technical, because as a teacher, you can get that way. And as a player, you have to be the complete opposite. So like when I practice every rep. So I might not be hitting as many putts.
But you're getting more out of them.
I have a pre-putt process and routine and a post-putt process and routine. So my post-putt is once I hit it, rather than the outcome, what's the feedback? What did I feel? Did I feel like I pulled it or pushed it or hit it too hard or too soft? Or was it just in sync and it was pure? You know what I mean? So, and then I try to imprint that. If it's pure, I try to imprint that in my memory, what it felt like. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As a matter of fact, that's kind of what I'm looking for when I go out to a practice green, is I'm trying to hit putts until I feel in sync, like my speeds match up, my club head speed, hand speed, and shoulder speed sync up, and the stroke feels good. And then once I feel that, I try to hang around that feel by imprinting it into my memory, if that makes sense. So that's kind of what I was doing in that 45 minutes, and everybody else has just hit a few putts, reacting to whether they go in or not, and then they're off to the first tee with their lab putter or whatever, and I'm sitting here putting a custom blade putter. You know, it's funny because now mallets are like 75% now.
It's crazy.
And blades are 25%, and 10 years ago, it probably was the other way around. And, you know, I understand greens are fast, right? And you got a choice between stability of a mallet and the precision of a blade. And I choose precision over stability any day. But that's a player preference. That makes sense. If I were doing the claw or the lead arm lock or the sweeper, I would probably be doing a zero torque mallet as well. But personally, I like the precision of a blade. I absolutely do. Plus, with mallets, I tend to aim them right, swing them right, and hit them right. And I don't like missing
putts
all day long. So I tend to putt.
How often when you're practicing, are you putting to an actual hole, whether it's a ghost hole or not? Or do you ever do things where you're putting to, like I often putt to the fringe, like just to get distance control down, just putt to a spot, try to stop it on the edge of the fringe. So how often are you putting to a hole or a ghost hole versus a tee or a string or something like that?
I'm old school, so I probably only have one ball with me anyway.
Yep.
Occasionally three if I get a crack a new sleeve open, but I'm not a big drill guy. But I mean, I'll putt to a ghost hole. I'll put a tee in the ghost hole so that I can have a mental connection between the old hole and the tee and just be mentally connected. I'm mainly working on feel. And I do a lot of watching the ball roll out. Like I think the learning takes place after the putt, if that makes sense. So like it's kind of like wine tasting. It's like you taste the wine after, right? And you can tell the grape and the barrel and the region. you know, when I'm hitting a putt, I'm really, really in tune with what just happened, if that makes sense. And sometimes it's you know, it's pure. So when it's pure, I'm trying, like I said before, imprint that. I have a feeling of what my pull might feel like, what my block might feel like, you know, but I'm just trying to get hone in on a really simple, maybe like one setup key for me, no more than two, and then just looking for that feel. And once I have that feel, I want to hang out with it all day long, if that makes sense, or as long as I can.
This episode is brought to you by the Fit for Golf app. And in my mind, and a lot of tour players, it's the number one fitness golf app. Mike Carroll has put together the best workout routines for you so that you can work on getting stronger, healthier, and of course, fitter, both at home with bands or at the gym with all the machines. He's got you covered. So you can hit the ball further, lower your scores, and play your best golf for years to come. Use code SPINAXIS to get 20% off your subscription. Your body and your golf game will thank you.
Yeah, I found that good putters know very, very quickly, oftentimes almost slightly before they hit the ball, whether it's going to come up short or long or be good distance. And they can judge other people. Good putters can learn more from watching other people's balls roll on the green than bad putters. Bad putters almost don't watch it. And good putters, they instantly know, oh, that ball's got to slow down. It's taking off a little too fast or something. Do you find that to be true as well?
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of like if you're on deck in baseball and they bring in a new pitcher, it's getting a sense of how much time the ball is spending on the slope. That makes sense. So that's one of the things that I watch is, you know, how quickly or how slowly does it take for the ball to stop on the slope, if that makes sense. And what we're really getting used to is not only just the slope, but the effective stimp or the friction going downhill, down grain, there's less friction. So it ball spending more time on the slope going uphill into the grain. It's going to stop quicker. It's going to hop just watching the balls roll out. And that's just one of the habits that I actually used to do. And then I stopped doing it. And then I spent time with Brad. And every ball he hits, he watches roll out. And I'm like, wait a minute, if one of the greatest players of all time studies the ball, maybe that's something I should probably be doing after every putt, if that makes sense. So, so I think that if you have a lot of experience on different slopes and different stimps, if you just get in the habit of watching the ball roll out and using that feedback that you were talking about, Eric, getting into that feedback, that recall, that recognition, and then you can adapt very quickly, if that makes sense. One of the hardest things to do is adapt from going indoors to outdoors, because there's a big difference in the artificial versus the real grass. That's one of the biggest adjustments. So that's why I always, this is fast. This is like a 13 stimp here, and my platform down at Pine Hills is a 14. So that's why I start downhill first, because the effective stimp is faster going downhill down grain. So start there, right? And then I start going uphill, if that makes sense, and side hill. But I always start downhill first. I want to see how fast these suckers really are going downhill down grain. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I've been on a journey of improving my own putting. And so I was excited for you to get on here and start tackle a couple questions in here. But yeah, like inside, our season's over here in Canada where I live. So I'm already inside working on it. And yeah, the AstroTurf here is quick, but it's just like you talked about, can I get a couple key basic feels here? And then the nice thing for me is I travel a fair amount for work. So I was just down in Atlanta, North Carolina with a bunch of grainy grass. And I definitely have improved my putting because of, like you said, just watching the ball roll out and watching other people, like, you know, three other putts where you can watch and it's like, okay, that's going to be across the grain. How much is it going to pull across the grain? And then you can take that into account into the putt that you're going to hit.
Yeah. And it's more subconscious. You're just looking at it and getting a feel for it. You're not like calculating how many feet it went per second. I mean, you know what I mean? You're just getting an idea of it. But, you know, I work indoors on my setup and my mechanics. And then when I go to the putting green, I'm not working on mechanics. I'm working on skill. So all my mechanical work is here. So isn't that cool? I don't go to the putting green to work on mechanics, where everybody else work on mechanics pretty much.
Yep.
I'm just working on process, getting out of my own head. You know what I mean? Like going through my feel library. You know, I've got a library of just a few feels that I need to look for, and that's it. Because I do know my stroke so well. So yeah, I'm not working on mechanics when I go to the practice green. How cool is that?
Yeah. So would you say, David, for those of us, you know, like Jason's in Canada, I'm in Ohio, you know, Eric's in PA, the season's over. We're going to be indoors for the next 5 months. What do we work on indoors on this synthetic turf so that we can come out in the spring and be ready to go?
Well, you can be ready to go with your setup and be ready to go with your mechanics, but your skill is going to have to be outdoors.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yep.
You can learn if you have a nice indoor golf arena, like over in Germany, where they've got this huge putting green at St. Leon Road, where they have 0, 1%, 2%, 3%. You can work on your aim point indoors or on slope, but you still need to get in the environment. This is the thing that the golfer doesn't understand. When the environment changes, the stress level changes. This is the safest place right here. This is the safest place. There's no stress. There's no threat. Then the next, yeah. And then when you go.
Same thing for full swing.
Absolutely. But then when you go to the putting green, there's a little more stress because the environment's changing and it's a little unpredictable after you've hit the putt, what's going to happen versus this felted carpet. I make everything in here. You know what I mean? and it has a little bit of break to it, but you know, going to the practice green, then going on the golf course. So the stress level is changing because the environment changes. And then you got to get ready for a tournament. So now you're playing with, you know, friends or you're preparing for a tournament. Then you get in a tournament, you know, so it's always like the environment, the stress level's increasing. And if you're not working on your skill set or your mental skills, as Dr. Rick Sessinghaus beautifully talks about, you know, that's the difference. The only difference between here and a tournament is perceived stress and trauma, right? Like that's what you're dealing with. So it's amazing how much work you can put in indoors and you get outdoors and then your mental and emotional skills don't allow you to do what you just work on all winter. And that's one thing that's very important. Maybe our listeners should write this down, is that your old tendencies are going to compete with your new tendencies. Like the old pattern likes to interfere or fight with the new one. That makes sense?
100%.
So certain players are good. Like Justin Rose is, what makes Rosie so good is he can actually play with change. So that would be the first question, your listeners. Am I comfortable playing with change? Because if I'm not, I probably shouldn't be taking a putting lesson because I'm not going to change anyway. You know what I mean? So like, for instance, I've talked about, you know, my foot pressure being a little bit on my right foot, my torso being a little forward. So my spine's out of alignment and I'm going to pull it. So it's like, I have to tell myself, okay, a little bit of foot pressure, move the torso sway a little bit more to center. Now I can stay behind it and turn and tilt and I don't pull it. But it's like an everyday thing. It's like every day I have to calibrate every day. Otherwise, I'm going to play the ball forward, stand on my right foot, have my chest forward. I'm going to pull it. And I'm sitting there pulling my hair out. Well, maybe I should change putters. Maybe I should change to a claw. No, what I need to change is what I don't want to change is the way my body is at address. Does that make sense? So it's like it's easier to change the putter. You're still going to pull it. You know, it's easier to change your grip. You're still going to pull it.
Well, you just find a putter that you aim to the right, and then it kind of cancel each other out, and then you get into another cycle of stuff.
Like, you just beat me to it. That's how I became a right aimer. I became a right aimer, which the cool kids tend to be right aimers, and because I was pulling it. So you just start playing the pull. That makes sense. And then that one time you're set up really good, then you push one, right? So, but you know, there are just certain players that are comfortable with playing with change and other players. And I'm a coach and I know it's just not easy to make a change. And you guys see this with full swing. You know, you would think with putting, it'd be the simplest thing to change, but it's really not. Cause putting's just a little more precise. And the reason is full swing, you've got some physics helping you square the face up. That makes sense. You got some forces that help the club get to zero.
And putting, it's all you.
Yeah, the putting, it's all your nerves, right? It's your fingers, hands, and arms. And can you return a square face?
I'd almost say putting is almost slightly more pressure packed than full swing.
Well, the outcome's 3 feet away.
Yeah. I got to be able to do this.
Yeah, but it's amazing how the average golfer just struggles with putting, right? So they just, you know, avoid it. I used to do this. Eric knows I'm a former golf machine Morag guy. I'll just hit it closer. Well, statistically, you're correct. If you just are closer in proximity on your approach shot and you're closer with your putt, you're going to 3-putt less.
Hey, even Boo Weekly won some PGA Tour events.
Absolutely. So you can, you don't have to be the best putter on the tour to be winning. But let me say this about tour players. A lot of people don't realize how good those guys are. Even the guy that's ranked 200th and is negative in the strokes gained, these guys are great. They really are. I mean, I've had a front row seat for 17 years watching the best players, but you got to remember they're putting on the best surfaces too. Mm-hmm. So if you brought them down here to the Muni, they might struggle a little bit on a stimp of 6 or 7 as well, because their stroke mechanics are more geared towards stimp of 12, yep. stimp of 15, if that makes sense. So, but those guys, they're all good. They're all good. Let me tell you, there is a big jump from the Corn Ferry Tour. I told this to Alex Smalley and Danny Walker. I work with Danny now. I used to work with Alex. But you're going to improve the most when you become a rookie on tour and you're green rating first, because you're different venues every week, and your speed control second, if that makes sense. And I saw it with both of those guys, and they're both like, yeah, my green reading is really good. You know what I mean? And whether they use aim point, tour read, old school, doesn't matter. These guys on tour are unbelievably good.
Yep.
And some just happen to be a little bit better. Like, what is strokes gained? Was it Sam Burns this year at 0.9? So you're gaining one stroke around with the putter.
Yeah.
So with the, I sent this to Eric earlier. It's really not about making your fair share of 10 to 20 footers. It's actually about reducing errors.
Yep. So you sent me a picture. I was going to ask you about that. You sent me a make miss grid. We'll put that in the show notes and as the chapter art for one of those chapters. Explain what you sent us.
Yeah, so most people look about making more putts. Well, let's not look on the back end. Let's reduce errors,
right?
So green reading errors, right? How many times are you misreading which way it breaks, let alone how much?
Right. So you have read error is the first column. Speed error is the second one.
Yeah. So is your dispersion on your putts tight with your distance, right? You know, are you knocking one 8 foot by and then the next one 4 foot short? That's 12 foot difference. I kind of like Scott Fawcett's 10% radius rule. That's pretty good. That's just
tour average is like 7.5%, but I like 10% as an easy number to do it as well.
For the amateur golfer. Yeah. And I would agree with you. I think tour players are much better than 10%.
Yep.
But that's a good thing for the amateur golfer, right? So if I have a 3-footer, if I get this within a 3-foot radius, that's a good putt. Now, a great putt would be a stress-free tap in. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And what's funny is I usually ask this question. If you hit 14 fairways and 18 greens and you had 36 putts, but your second putt was a tap in on every putt, how well did you putt that day?
Putted pretty good.
Unbelievably well. Your lag putting was, absolutely, right? So just a little tap in, a little brush in, right? Stress-free. And didn't Feldo shoot a round like that in one of the majors, if I can remember right, where he hit every fairway and every green and just two-putted his way to a championship? I think that would win a U.S. Open. I don't know that would win. Mm. I don't know that philosophy or strategy would win a tour event these days, because these guys are shooting stupid, stupid numbers. I mean, you know, 20-something under. And yeah, you just got to make 5, 6 putts. You got to make 5. I always tell the guys, I tell you got to make 6. The girls, I say you got to make 5 birdies around.
It's crazy.
If you can have 6 1 putts or better and no 3 putts.
That's pretty darn good.
You're doing good. And the 3 putting, it's going to happen, because sometimes you get a ball striking 3 putt where you got to go up and over a crown. The hole's on the other side of the crown and you're 60 feet away. And it's like, I just hope I can stop the ball. You know, you're going to get 3 putts. The 3 putts I don't like are the idiot 3 putts where your second putt is longer than your first one. So you have like a 4 foot burst and then you rip it through the break and that power lips out. You got 6 feet coming back. So I don't like the idiot 3 putt. But yeah, I think reducing read errors, reducing speed errors, reducing line errors, like the number of putts that you're pulling or pushing, or do you have a tendency to like, okay, I'm going to aim 2 cups to the right, but I'm actually aimed at the golf cart on the right, which is probably not, you know, 8 feet to the right. But yeah, so I think if the amateur golfer would look at reducing errors, and because they sometimes are compounding errors or multiple errors, they've misread it, right? Not just which way, but how much, you know, therefore they've hit it the wrong speed and they may have like pulled it to start it online or whatever. So you might have 2 or 3 errors just on one putt. So if we can get those errors down to where, you know, I can still have an error and accidentally hit it the right speed on the wrong line and it goes in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I call that the Vegas putt, you know, where it's just pure luck, you know, that it went in. I just think, you know, reducing errors. And I think green reading and speed would be the first two places I would start. Starting the ball online takes a little bit of precision, takes a little bit of coordination. I get a lot of amateur golfers going, why can't I get the ball through the ball gate? You know, it's like, you're not coordinated enough. They look at me like, what? You're not coordinated enough. Have you ever felt like putting? Like, you've got all this extra movement that you don't have the precision in your hands to return the face square. So they're like, well, I should be able to get it through the ball gate. I had one guy literally, that's all he wanted a lesson on, was getting the ball through the ball gate. And the amount of movement that he had when he was putting was just unbelievable. You know, and it's like, let's work on some basic coordination drills, like learning to separate my upper body from my lower body, learning to separate my shoulders a little bit from my head and my neck, because my head's going to go back if my shoulders are turning forward because of the tilt. But, you know, just basic coordination drills to quiet some things down. And then they start saying, well, that feels simpler. Well, of course, you know, the way you're moving is making it very complex and hard to get it through the little ball gate. But yeah, it takes some high level coordination. And if you have ball stick skills, I find hockey players make great putters. Baseball players make great putters. Lacrosse players, great putters.
Sorry, yeah. Jason.
What's wrong with me?
What about curling? What about curlers?
Hey, Jason, just get
he's,
you.
He's Canadian, so.
Jason, just get yourself a heel shafted blade, and it'll feel like a hockey.
Yeah. Just buy the Happy Gilmore thing. And
get the Happy Gilmore one.
Yeah, just put with that.
CCM.
I may have thought about that.
Get you a CCM putting stick.
Yeah.
David, where can people find more about David Orr?
Yeah, so I have my website, www.flatstickacademy.com. I have a subscription portion. I also have a digital product portion that people can buy, like Short Putt Focus or Flat Stick Fundamentals. Or they can just join for $9.99 a month and see whatever I happen to post that month. So
join that, work on that all winter, especially you guys up north.
Absolutely. So just realize when you work on it up north, you're still going to have a transition to that new environment outdoors. And that's
love that.
That's kind of like work on your mechanics indoors, go work on your skill and your process out.
Very good.
Love it. David, thanks so much for joining us. Jason, where can people find us?
Always online at thespinaxis.com and all socials at thespinaxis.
Take care.